Hello, welcome to Swansea Bay Clinicians Conversations Around. And today we're going to be talking about Wales lung health checks. My name is Sarah Woods. I'm a GP working in the Swansea area, and I also work part-time at Swansea University currently. My guest today is Dr. Sinan Eccles, respiratory consultant in the Royal Glamorgan Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Eccles.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Well, thanks for coming today. And I understand you're keen to talk about the Wales lung health checks. Could you tell us more about that, please?
Yeah, so my role in this, so like you say, I'm a consultant respiratory physician. But for the last 12 months alongside that, I've been working with Public Health Wales and the Wales Cancer Network to scope lung health checks for Wales. So, at the heart of lung health checks is lung cancer screening, really. Lung cancer screening is something that people have thought of time. So, people have tried to do it with chest X-rays and with sputum cytology in the past, and those didn't really work particularly well. But over the last 2 decades or so, there's been interest in using low dose CT to try and screen for lung cancer, and that's proved to be successful in clinical trials. So that's what we're looking at.
All right. So has it been used in other parts of the country so far, or in the UK?
The first bit of evidence really came from America, so that's where it started. So there was a trial called the National Lung Screening Trial, which reported in 2010, and that showed around a 20% reduction in lung cancer mortality in the screened group compared to the group who didn't undergo any screening. And that was enough for America to recommend lung cancer screening for a high-risk population from that point. So they have their own screening task force, and they've recommended lung cancer screening with low dose CT since then. Obviously, America has a different healthcare model to us. So the way you do it in America is you go and see your physician, and they refer you in for it, rather than things like breast test Wales or colorectal screening here, where we actively go and find the population. There's been a few other trials since then, one of which was done in the UK. So it was done around Cambridge and Nottingham, were the two main areas where it happened. And then, as the evidence has grown, there have been pilot projects in several places. So Manchester have had a big pilot project, Liverpool, Nottingham, some areas of London. It is happening in a fairly big way in England now, in some places. So in 2019, NHS England said, okay, we're going to invest in this. So they put £70 million into it, and they've started doing it in around, I think it was initially 10, and then it went out to around 14 different sites around England. Some of them had got started, some of them were about to start when COVID hit, so they've been put on hold. But England are ahead of the curve with this, and we're scoping things out now to try and work out what the best step for Wales is.
So have they had any outcomes from the England trial so far?
Yeah, so the screening is a it's a interesting thing to try and gather evidence on, because there's lots of different biases that you can come across if you just look at the data in a certain way. So, for example, the Manchester is probably the place that's released the most data. So we know across the UK in general, about 3/4 of patients who present through usual ways with lung cancer will have advanced disease, so metastatic disease at presentation. And with lung cancer screening, that is pretty much reversed. So you get about 3/4 of people at stage one or stage two when you can radically treat them. And that's what's been seen across all the UK pilots. The tricky thing with screening is just because you find lots of early stage disease doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing good. It's quite a counterintuitive thing. But if, for example, you're detecting lots of cancers that you never would have found when that person was alive anyway, it would have been a tiny little thing that had sat there for years, and they would have died of something else before you detect it, then that's kind of a bias that that makes stage shift look like a more effective thing than it actually is. So that's called overdiagnosis. And that's one of the problems that you get with screening trials, unless you do it through a randomized controlled trial. So the pilots are useful to see that things are working operationally, but you need randomized controlled trials to prove that it's an effective thing to do. We had that national lung screening trial, which was done in America, which was published 2010, and that had a positive outcome. But then there's been lots of other little trials that have been done over the last 10 years, which didn't have significant reductions in lung cancer mortality. So there were small trials in Italy and Denmark and a few other places, but they're all really underpowered to detect a difference. So a lot of weight was put on a trial called the Nelson trial, which was published at the start of last year. So that was a big trial in the Netherlands and Belgium, randomized control trial, people randomized to either low-dose screening or low-dose CT screening or no screening. And that showed a significant result. So there's 20% or greater reduction in lung cancer mortality in that trial. So that combination of those two big randomized controlled trials is the bulk of the evidence for this.
Oh, that's really interesting. And how do you think, how do you see it working in Wales? Would people be invited to screening, or what would the process look like?
So the mechanism of how it would work as a national program is still being worked out, really. So the most screening, or all national population-based screening programs, have to go through a process where the National Screening Committee looks at the evidence and then makes recommendations about what we should be doing. So aortic aneurysm, the National Screening Committee looked at the trials, they said this is what you should do, same with colorectal screening and so on. The slight difficulty is the National Screening Committee only, up till now, their remit has been that they will look at population-based screening programs. And by population-based screening, you're talking about looking at sections of the population which are only selected by either age or sex. So colorectal screening is for both sexes of a certain age. Aortic aneurysm is age plus male sex. Breast cancer is age plus female sex, and so on. The one exception that they've made to that is they made recommendations on diabetic eye screening, and that kind of muddied the waters a bit about what their remit was meant to be. And then for what we would consider targeted screening, usually NICE looks at that. So it's a separate kind of thing. So an example of targeted screening would be, so that there are specific recommendations for women who have a strong family history of breast cancer or have one of the breast cancer mutation genes. So NICE make recommendations about what you do in that area. And there'd been this debate about where lung health checks or lung cancer screening would sit, whether it should technically count as a population-based screening or a targeted screening. And that slowed things down, really, because we didn't really know who was going to look at it or make recommendations on it. That's been helped by a report that came out last year called the Mike Richards Report, which was looking at screening and the process for deciding how screening should be decided and how it should work. And that suggested breaking down the barriers between population-based screening and targeted screening and looking at all as one thing. So that's why the National Screening Committee have started looking at this now. The way that it's worked in the pilots in England, and the way I suspect it'll work eventually, is you go to the GP records, which is the way that it works for diabetic eye screening and lots of the other things. And you get that the GP population from the GP records. You select out an age group. There's a debate about what the age group should be, but the NHS England program is between 55 and 75. And then you use the GP record to pick out people who are either current smokers or have smoked in the past. So you pick out the ever smokers. The ever smokers then undergo a risk assessment. So there are tools that you can use to predict the future risk of lung cancer over the next 5 years, which look at things like the heaviness of the smoking history, the age, family history of lung cancer, history of COPD, those kind of things. And then if they're above a certain threshold, then they get invited for their low-dose CT.
Oh, So would that mean that the GPs would be supplying the information for that, or the tool calculator? Is that, would that be organised by the screening team, do you think?
So I think it will be the latter. So the way that it's worked in most places, and the way that I would envisage it working in Wales, at least to get, at least to start with, is we would, in the screening body, however you set it up to do it, would interrogate the GP records to find the age range and the ever smokers. And different places have done it different ways. So in Manchester, they've invited everybody who's an ever smoker in that age range for a lung health check. So they have a limited capacity to do that, but they've invited them all for a lung health check. And the lung health check is more than just the low dose CT. It's the risk assessment, and there's a few other bits that you bolt on. Most other places do a telephone triage to move on to the next step then. So you ring all the people in that age range who are ever smokers, and then you do the risk assessment over the phone, and then you just invite the ones for a CT and the other bits if they're above that risk threshold. I think the kind of holy grail of the way you would do it is if you could actually get all the information that you wanted from the GP record, and you wouldn't need that kind of phone triage bit, which obviously is labor intensive. The risk tools that we've got at the moment don't have, you can't get all the right information from the GP record at the moment. So things like family history of lung cancer isn't going to be, it's not something that's recorded on GP records as a general rule. So there isn't a way that you can get all the information at the moment unless the risk tools move along.
Yeah, and it would obviously rely on us as GPs to make sure that we're recording. I mean, certainly you'd hope, say, the smoking is recorded, but whether, as you say, family history isn't always, you know, coded or everything, you know, so I can imagine, yeah, we'd have to be ensuring we were coding things correctly to help that, you know, if that's what's needed. So if a patient was called for screening, and they were going for the CT, is that like what would it involve for the patient from their perspective? It would, they get a letter that goes to the hospital for a CT, is that how it would work?
Yeah, so the way it's been set up is usually they get identified from the GP record. They usually get sent a letter saying this is something that is happening. So if you tee them up, then the uptake tends to be better, rather than just if you kind of go to them and say this is happening now. So they usually get kind of a warning letter. Then they get an invitation for the telephone lung health check. And then if they get invited, if they're above the risk threshold for low dose CT, then they get invited for a kind of face-to-face lung health check. Everything I've talked about so far has been about lung cancer screening, but the concept of a lung health check, it's framed in that way for two reasons. So the first reason is if you do it as a lung health check and you bolt other things onto the low-dose CT, then you can deliver other clinically effective things for better cost effectiveness. So if you co-deliver smoking cessation advice or case finding of COPD or sometimes even cardiovascular risk assessment in that same package, then it improves the cost effectiveness of what you're doing. The second reason why it's packaged as a lung health check is if you say to that population, we're going to screen you for lung cancer, then they don't want to come. They're terrified. So there's a lot of stigma and kind of negative connotations of lung cancer. People think there's nothing you can do about it. It's a death sentence. Whereas if you frame the idea as a lung health check that includes that, then people are much more open to that concept and you tend to get better uptake.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And are you, when you're seeing in the trials, are you seeing that they're picking up a lot of other conditions as well then, as well as lung cancer, so COPD, and is that what's been shown so far?
Yeah, so there are some things that you actively go looking for, and then there are some things you find by chance. So the things we're actively looking for are obviously lung cancer on the scan, and using the risk tools, it's in most of the UK data, it's something like about 3% of the people who you scan, you detect a lung cancer, which is fairly high in the grand scheme of things. And 3/4 of those will be stage one lung cancers, which you can treat surgically or with radical radiotherapy or whatever. The things that we don't necessarily want to find are things like small pulmonary nodules. So those can sometimes develop into a cancer. But lots of people have small nodules, and they usually need interval scans to see if they're changing over time. The idea is that you would do those interval scans within the program. So that's not something that gets handed back to the respiratory team or the GP or whatever to manage. That gets done within the program. On the CT, one of the difficulties with low-dose CT is there's no end to the things that you can find. And some of those things are definitely useful to find. So if you find someone has a 7-centimeter thoracic aneurysm sitting inside them on their CT scan, then you're definitely going to benefit from doing something about that. If you find they've got a little bit of emphysema, if you find they've got a little bit of bronchiectasis that they haven't got symptoms related to, if you find they've got a renal cyst, none of those things necessarily are that helpful to know about. So certainly in the early pilots, in the early trials, there was a very kind of safety first approach where every incidental finding was reported back to the GP and reported to the patient, created a lot of anxiety. Went on to do a lot of additional investigations for no real benefit. So one of the things the NHS England programme has tried to do is create an incidental findings protocol. So they have specific things to say, if you find this, you don't report it. If you find this, then you only report it if it's this level of severity and so on. We don't know if that balance is perfect yet. And it's something that's still probably being refined, but it's something people are making strides towards. The COPD is slightly different. So one of the things that's been packaged with the lung health check in most places is you do spirometry when they come for the lung health check. And that is because you're actively looking for COPD. Now, a lot of people have airflow obstruction and don't have a label of COPD before. And what we really want to do is pick out the ones in whom that's useful to know. So to me, the group in whom it's useful to know are the people with symptoms of COPD. So I'm not really interested if they've got asymptomatic airflow obstruction, together with a level of airflow obstruction that's significant. So to me, if they've got mild airflow obstruction, I don't think that needs any acting on personally. People disagree about that, but that's my view. I think if they've got moderate or worse airflow obstruction combined with symptoms of COPD, then that's a diagnosis of COPD worth knowing about. And that person's going to benefit from smoking cessation, flu jab, bronchodilators, pulmonary rehab.
Yeah. So that's sort of highlighting how important the beginning part of it is, the spirometry or the health check and the risk assessment, I guess. If someone does get they do pick up an early lung cancer, do they get directed then straight through to sort of respiratory oncology? Is that what happens next?
Yeah, so I think that certainly I am very aware that there's a risk that you do this lung health check and then an awful lot of stuff gets dumped back on primary care to sort out. So one of the main aims of it has been to try and direct as much traffic directly to where it needs to go rather than go back through primary care for those things. So if you find a 1-centimeter nodule or a mass that needs to be investigated as a lung cancer, then the idea would be that the lung health check program refers directly into the lung MDT. Or if you've got a thoracic aneurysm, that gets referred directly into vascular surgery and so on. So the idea would be that most things get directed straight to where they need to go. You might still find occasional things that don't necessarily need a secondary care referral, but will need some kind of test going forward. So I think there probably is always going to be a small amount of overspill that goes back to primary care, but all the protocols that have been set up so far are aimed at trying to minimize that.
Well, and I you say, it's in the patient's best interest. We're picking up people with things early that they can be helped with, and you know, that sounds like a good thing. It sounds really positive. When do you think, if it does go ahead in Wales, when, what sort of timescales are you looking at?
So setting up a large scale screening program takes forever. I think the idea of a national program, we would have to wait to see what the National Screening Committee say, because that has implications for how things get funded and how you roll things out. So I think an outcome from the National Screening Committee probably isn't going to happen for at least another year or 18 months or so. They're doing some cost effectiveness modelling at the moment, which takes some time, and then they need to look at the evidence in combination with the judgment. Things like bowel screening, for example, and aneurysm screening, from the positive recommendation of the National Screening Committee to actually getting a national program implemented, it takes somewhere between 5 and 10 years, because it's a massive thing to set up and to mobilize. What my aim is to try and get a pilot off the ground in the meantime. So that's effectively what these programs in England are. They're implementation pilots. So they're not really to see whether lung cancer screening works, because that's what the randomized controlled trials are for. But what we want to know is this something that can work in practice within the healthcare system that we've got? So for screening to work, you have to be able to identify the population. You have to be able to convince the population to come. You have to have a good quality assured program, and then you also have to have the capability to deal with things downstream. So there's no point identifying loads of lung cancer if you haven't got the capacity to actually sort out all those new diagnoses that you've got. We've been looking at each bit of that. So there's issues with PET capacity, there's issues with thoracic surgery capacity, respiratory medicine, pathology. The biggest one is probably radiology reporting. So if you do this as a national program, then you generate thousands and thousands of additional CT scans every year, and we don't have the capacity to report those at the moment. That's something that you can kind of address over time with workforce, so you can say, okay, yeah, this is a problem, we're going to try and recruit towards that. There's a hope that AI is going to develop over the next 5 or 10 years to a point that it's going to ease the burden in some way. I don't think we're probably going to get to a point where radiologists can't look at a scan, but I think that in terms of aiding them to report scans quickly, it's already happening to a point. So there's already software that will detect pulmonary nodules and measure them and see whether they've changed over time, which isn't used widely at the moment, but is being used in the trials in England. I've gone completely off what you asked me about, which is when we were going to start something. So the my hope would be that we can get a pilot going within the next couple of years. So we need to try and get some funding, and then maybe just select one site to get started with, just so we can start testing the process, find out what are the GP smoking records like. Are they complete enough? Are they accurate enough for us to get the right population? Have we got the right way of inviting people so they'll come? How do we get those protocols to link directly into the MDTs and the services that we need? So my hope is that we'd be able to do that within the next few years, get that started.
So as GPs, I suppose that's something we can take from this, is to make sure our records, our smoking records, as mentioned before, keep an eye on those. It's really fascinating. It's not something I knew anything about, really, and I'm sure other GPs will probably feel similar, I hope. So this has been really useful and interesting to hear about it all. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think is important for us to know about?
I don't think so. I think my main message for primary care really would be anytime you can update the smoking data, that's going to be helpful in the long term, because I think this is coming one way or another, whether it's as a national screening program through the National Screening Committee, or if it finds some other place in a way that cardiovascular health checks and other things have done. I think 20% reduction in lung cancer mortality is, it's too big a statistic to ignore. So lung cancer is by far the biggest cancer killer in Wales. It kills, breast and bowel cancer are the next two, and it kills more people every year than those two added together. Wales has the worst or the most lung cancer deaths. No, sorry, it has the worst lung cancer outcomes of all the countries in the UK, and it's towards the bottom of everywhere in Europe. So we've got massive room for improvement, and this is something that we can do that's really positive and will make a massive difference. So I think it is going to be hard. It won't be no work for primary care. So that kind of smoking data, the incidental findings, there will be a little bit of offshoot coming to you guys, probably not as much as will be coming to me in respiratory medicine and in my lung cancer practice and in my general respiratory clinics. But it's such a beneficial thing to do, because at the moment we throw so much resource into our lung cancer service because it's the biggest cancer killer. We've got our rapid access clinics, we've got fast CT slots, we've got PET and thoracic surgery and EBUS and all these different things. But I know that when we submit our data to the lung cancer audit every year, by the time we're submitting it, half the patients have died in the 12 months. So yeah, anything we can do to reduce that mortality will make a massive difference.
Absolutely, yeah, that 20% mortality figure, it really, you know, that really sticks in your head, really. And that's, as you say, to be able, especially at the moment, to be able to think of something positive that we can be doing or be involved in. I'm sure all GPs would welcome that, definitely. So thank you very much for your time, Dr. Eccles, and yeah, it's been fascinating hearing all about it, and yeah, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Right, hopefully it should say something like downloading or something now. Can you see it?